Good evening, everybody. Schwartz Plotz are coming at you live from Cincinnati, Ohio. Right in front of my house. Running a little bit late. We're going to be driving to the shul, so join with me, please, as we drive together from my house on Meadow Ridge Lane all the way over to the shul. Hope everybody had a great day and had a successful day, and I know that I did. Gave blood today, gave platelets and plasma, and that was very encouraging. Last time I tried to give platelets, my number was too low, but thankfully, thank God, today the number was up there, and we're able to give a double platelet, as we say, and then a plasma, and get back into the swing of things. To me, it's really an important thing to be able to give blood, and it's a privilege and something that I live by, and had a great conversation about boosting our numbers next year when our shul does the blood drive. We had a decent enough turnout this past year. Could have done so much better. And I spoke to one of the technicians, and Nikki said, always ask Hawksworth, ask your coordinator whether or not there's a promotion. Actually, Greg said this, another technician. Is there a promotion that comes right before your blood drive and sucks people away from your drive because they want to get a T-shirt? Well, it turns out, of all funny things, turns out that giving away a T-shirt is a bigger deal than I thought, because some people really, really love that stuff. I had no idea. So, a good thing to know, and especially this up-and-coming football, soccer is becoming extremely popular over here in Cincinnati. And by the way, we're here at the shul. So giving out a T-shirt of the local soccer team, that seems to be a very big deal. Come on out. Amram. How you doing? Very good, man. What's going on? Things are good, thank God. We're doing good, and we're here to give a class. Come on in, you big lug. Let's go. Oh, you can eat the whole bag? No, you can't do that. You can't, eat one or two. Have two. I don't want you to have a whole bag of... My little boy, see what they give out. Cookies at the blood drive. He wants to eat the whole bag of... nice. Famous Amos. Can't really do that. Not good for you. Thanks very much. Okay, let's go inside. Let's head towards the shul. We're here in the shul right now. And we have Ortoris Cincinnati. They're going to be renting space from us. So exciting for us. And they're taking over the place. And we're very, very excited about that. Very fortunate. Come on in. Okay, very good. Get the light on. Let's get the AC going. Mrs. Berlov, how are you? Okay, we're doing good over here. Light on. AC on. Let's set it. There we go. And we're going to begin. Okay, very good. Excellent. Let's bring this out. And we're going to get started. How exciting is this? Very exciting indeed. Let me just, Amram, please give me that, please bring that over to me. Thanks so much. Okay, let's see if we can get a chair or anything at all to sit on. These guys have everything under lock and key. I'm going to just borrow this chair over here if I can. Okay, there you go. Put this over here. Put the chair, and here we go.
Okay. I'm out of here.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Have a good night.
See you tomorrow.
You got it. Okay, people, thank you very much for your extraordinary patience as we begin the class. As far as I'm concerned, we can dive in up the whole chapter. and get this thing done. Because chapter 6 is truly becoming a bit of a drag. I mean, I hate to say it, but it is taking the wind out of my sails. Amram, can I please have that? Thank you so much, honey man. Looks like we're ready to go. So form over here. Okay. Great. Your brother joining us tonight? Okay. Very good. Be well. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks again for sticking with us. Here we go. Chapter 6 in 1 Kings, Malchum Aleph, chapter Pervav, and we are on Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Pasuk 21. So let's see if we can do some damage to this chapter. Vayitzav Shlomo Sabayis Mipnima Zahav Sagur. There's that phrase again. Zahav Sagur. Pure gold is how we translated it before. And we're coming up against it again. Remember that interesting explanation of last week? Anybody who locks away, if he has any of this good gold, he locks it away for himself. Locked up gold. Shlomo overlaid the house as Habayis. He overlaid the house from the inside with this pure gold. Vayaber biratokos. Zahav, the Fnei Hadvir, Vayitzapehu Zahav. And then, Vayaber, well, what does that mean? Over here, they translate, he barred, B-A-R-R-E-D. And let's use that for the moment. Rashi is going to try to shed some light on that. He barred with chains of gold, Beratoko Zahav. He barred with chains of gold, the Fnei Hadvir, before, and now the translation that's normally given here in the Judaica is that the word devir means the sanctuary. But for Rashi, it's going to mean that separation, that separating curtain between the regular part of the sanctuary and the Holy of Holies. That's how Rashi understands the word devir. Okay, but in all events, he's barring with chains of gold in front of the sanctuary, says the Judaica press, by its apeo zahav, and he overlaid it with gold. Well, you know, what's the one word that's really coming up a lot in that verse? Yeah, that's right, zahav. It makes three times an appearance over there in the verse. So yeah, exactly. As Mrs. Brolov said, we can confidently say that there's a lot of gold going on in this construction. Let's take a look at the footnote on 21. Es habayis, Vayitzav Shlomo es habayis. Shlomo overlaid the house, mipnima, from the inside, zahav sagur. So what's that mean? So says Rashi, you know what the house is? Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim. This phrase, es habayis, the house, you know what it means? That means the Holy of Holies. That's an interesting understanding. Okay, I wouldn't have necessarily thought that. And we're going to see that Rashi is going to say, okay, so bias means Holy of Holies. As kol habayis, the entire house, that's going to mean the whole big shebang, the whole sanctuary, and not merely the Kodesh HaKadosh, not just the Holy of Holies, but rather the whole temple. Okay, so for Rashi, when we see the word as habayis, the house, it means the Holy of Holies. Others maintain this refers to the temple in general, and they quote down the Metzudas David and the Abar Benel. So let me just confirm that. Okay. By Yitzhak Shlomo, Ba'lomar Shazav Sipoi Ha'echal Hanasa Befnim Hayazav Sagor Kimo Shal Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay. So there he's talking about, according to the Metzudah, talking about the Heichal in general. Okay? The whole sanctuary, the whole hall, was lit up with gold on the inside. And he barred by Aber, he barred, B-A-R-R-E-D, where have you ever seen that word? So says Rashi over there, by Aber Lashon Brechim. It's an expression of attaching bolts. Says Rashi is putting on bolts. And baratokos, chains of gold. What is that? Okay, so
Rashi says, Baratokos, okay, Shalos, chains. What are we doing? What are we doing? If you want to write, I'd be happy to give you a piece of paper. Hold on 1 second. And you can write. Would you like to do that?
Yeah.
Of course you do. Here you go. 1 second. You can write over here. Dear Pokos, okay, just write on the back tab. There you go. All right. Baratokos is translated as chains. All right? And he, Vayabe Baratokos Zahav, he overlaid it with gold. That's a reference to the partition, says the Mitzvah. These chains were hung in the temple before the partition in place of the curtains which were in the tabernacle. These chains, these ratokos, were hung in the Beis HaMikdash before the partition in place of the curtains which were in the Mishkan, says the Radak and the Ralbag. Others say that these chains were used to attach the gold covering to the partition, which was of stone. Okay, so these chains were used to attach the gold covering to the partition made of stone. It was not advisable, it says here, to apply the gold directly to the stone because of its tendency to discolor and harm the metal, says Rabbeinu Yeshaya and the Abarbanel. You know, there's no doubt that we've got to give credit to the author over here who's trying his best to paint the picture and explain to us what this construction looked like. He gives us numbers. He tells us what's covered with gold. It really is a valiant effort to explain to the reader what this Binyan Beis HaMikdash looked like. It's just that it's lost on me, unfortunately. Since I'm not an architect, I'm not a numbers guy. I remember being in graduate school, and I was taking an accounting class. I was considering getting an MBA. I'm sitting there during accounting class going, I can't believe I'm in this. I am not in the right program. And I bailed out and went to law school instead. And now, and then of course, they have an accounting class for lawyers. I don't think I took that class. Anyway, so...
Well, in accounting, they have a class in law for business law.
For accounting, maybe. Right. Yeah, you gotta learn the other thing, but... Well, not if I can help it. So over here, trying our best to try to figure it out. Verse 22. Ves kolabayis tzipo zahav atom kolabayis. And the whole house he overlaid with gold until all the house was finished. Now here the term kol habayis is used. Kol habayis, it seems, for Rashi will mean the entire temple as a structure, and not merely the Holy of Holies. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, Mrs. Miller's going to comment.
They're translating Rashi as saying that it's attaching with both. But Rashi says, Lashon Brichim. And Brichim is the same word that is used when they built the Mishkan for the bars that went through the planks to hold them together.
Uh-huh. It was that item that was used to hold the planks together.
Remember,
hold those walls
had,
up.
It had bars that were half bars that went on each side, and then there was the full side bar that went through a hole in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Was called
priesthood. Uh-huh. So attaching bolts.
It's bars.
Right.
It's barring it.
Uh-huh. Putting up bars. Literally, I see. Putting up bars, attaching bars in order to be able to keep the walls up in the Mishkan, to keep the planks up, to keep the walls up. They were attached in such a way through these long, long bars threading through to keep them up. Right?
Well, I mean, that's the way the Mishkan was built.
Right.
But the word that he's using to translate the Yaber is the same word that the Torah uses for the bars of the Mishkan.
So that same verb, Yaber, Mrs. Berla points out, is the same word that the Torah uses
for
the Mishkan.
It's No, it doesn't use Vayaver, but it uses Brichim.
Brichim. The word Brichim comes up in the Mishkan.
Which Rashi says is what this means, which means goes back to here, barring it,
mm-hmm.
would be a more accurate translation according to Rashi.
Uh-huh. Okay, very good. Thank you so much. Shkoyach. Okay, the whole house, he overlaid with gold until all the house was finished. He overlaid the whole house until it was all concluded. And the whole altar that was by the sanctuary, he overlaid with gold. See some of those footnotes. Start with number 22 at the very bottom of page 59 if you have the book. And the whole house, that's Kol HaBayis, all of the entire temple. So for Rashi, when he sees the term that's Kol HaBayis, that's his tip-off that now we're talking about the entire structure, not simply the Holy of Holies. And so the entire house, the whole temple he overlaid with gold, okay, until he concluded the entire thing. Even the ceiling was covered with gold, according to the Mitzvah David, because of this teaching over here from the Pasuk. He was covering up everything with gold. Anything at all?
So I was going to say, in terms of the difference between calling the Devir the sanctuary and the partition, it amounts to the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the partition is in front of the sanctuary. It's in front of the Kodesh HaKodesh.
Right.
So, if you're in front of the Kodesh HaKodesh, or if you're in front of the partition that's in front of the Kodesh HaKodesh, there's not a whole lot of difference, unless you're on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Thank you so much. Who's here? Amram, anybody? Okay. Thank you, Mrs. Burlow. Okay. He overlaid with gold. Tzipa Zahav. Let's see the word. That's called Habayis. Tzipa Zahav, the entire structure. He overlaid with gold, says the footnote. And in 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 4, this is an interesting footnote. Take a look at this. We find that King David left 7,000 talents of refined silver, kesef, for the walls of the temple, which apparently was never used. We don't see that stuff being utilized.
Why?
All we see is gold being utilized. We don't see King Shlomo utilizing the apparently the silver that his father prepared for the structure, the Beis HaMikdash. So in Shmos Rabbah 35, we're told, our rabbis explained that David really left gold for this purpose. He didn't leave silver for this purpose. Rather, he left Zahav, gold. It was called Kesef. When you take a look at 1 Chronicles, you'll see the word Kesef over there, which can mean money, often means silver, can mean money in general. It was called Kesef from the word Kasaf, or in the Hifil, in the causative binyan, Huhichsif, the infinitive form, lahachsif, to put to shame, so that the gold was of exceptional quality, which put all other gold to shame. Boy, you know, some of these drushim are really kind of far-fetched. I mean, is it true that the silver was never used? I mean, yeah, it was real.
And if you want to say it was gold, then that gold was locked up for that purpose.
Right.
Which would be the locked up gold.
It was locked up for the purpose of the
right.
sanctuary?
If he put it away,
right.
then it would have been locked up.
Right.
Which would have been your locked up gold.
Oh, that would have been the Zahav Sagur. That would have been that locked up gold that we keep on talking about from that unusual phrase, Zahav Sagur, locked up gold. Now, that is an interesting point, Mrs. Verlov, and I kind of like that. David locked up the gold, and there's your terminology. I think that's about as good as you'll ever find. That would make, and I'm surprised that they're not making that connection. Amram, can I please have the pen?
Because
I like that.
Because
it was what?
Because it was
Kesa. Because it was Kesa. But maybe this is Zahav Sagur.
No, what?
Okay.
Can I see?
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, Highness.
All the way.
Okay.
You still need to hold it.
I still need to hold it.
While you're doing it.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, I don't even know how to. Can I please get?
No, you need to hold it while you're doing it.
Can I please have my pen back?
This is your pen.
Can I have it work again, please?
You need to.
I need to hold it. It doesn't really work like that. It's not the purpose of a pen. Okay, I can't use it. Very good. You use it. Enjoy it. Very good. We'll write. Well, some other way we'll write those words. Zahav Sagur. Okay. In the sanctuary, he used pure gold. In the sanctuary, he used pure gold. Pure gold, whereas in the temple, the gold was not as pure, says the Ralbag. All right? And the whole altar that was by the sanctuary, in those words, the Cholam is Beach, Ashela Devir, Tzipa Zahav. And the whole altar that was by the sanctuary, he overlaid with gold, says the footnote, the altar was covered on all six sides by gold. Its position was directly opposite the entrance to the sanctuary. Its position was directly opposite the entrance to the sanctuary. Okay.
So the Mishkan was also, you had the Shofan and the menorah were up by the wall on either side, and then in the middle, further back, in front of. Was the
effect. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Now we're getting somewhere. Chapter 6, verse 23. Vayas badevir shnei kruvim atse shaman eser amos komaso. That's the pasuk in its entirety. Let's break it apart. He made, Shlomo made within the sanctuary, vayas badevir, he made within the sanctuary shnei kruvim. Two cherubim. I've got a story about Justice Antonin Scalia. I can't say it now, I suppose, but that's how Judge Scalia referred to the kruvim, the cherubim. I believe it or not, I've got a story about him. He made within the sanctuary two kruvim, atse shaman, olive wood, made up of olive wood, atse shaman, wood of olive. Eser amos komaso. Each one 10 cubits was its height. Is it not hot in here? I mean, is the AC on?
Okay.
Very good. All right, so he made these kruvim, and he made them out of atse shaman, olive wood. Now, let's take a look at the footnote. Literally, wood of oil. Wood of oil. The Targum renders this olive wood. Let's take a look at the Targum, da'ae zeta, or da'ae zesa, okay? Wood, olive wood, okay? Radak adds that these olive trees from which this wood was derived were most likely old trees which no longer produced fruit. It would otherwise be prohibited to destroy a fruit-bearing tree because the Pasuk in Devarim forbids us to do that. Torah says you're not allowed to destroy a fruit-bearing tree. In attempting to abide by the literal translation, he suggests another possibility. After all, how are you supposed to make these kruvim out of olive wood if you've got olives being, you know, raised on these branches? What gives you the right to take the branches and start cutting them down in order to make kruvim? Torah forbids you to do that. So how did they do this? So one answer is, okay, they were too old. They were no longer producing fruit. And since they're no longer producing fruit, now you're not over on the lav. You're not going to be transgressing that prohibition of do not destroy a fruit-bearing tree. It's not bearing fruit anymore. But in order to abide by the literal translation, he suggests another possibility. This is of the cedar species of woods. When you see the words atse shaman here in the pasuk, this was cedar, a species of wood containing oils used in the manufacture of perfumes and spices. Adaristelio says this is balsam wood. Okay. So according to the Radak, another way to understand it is a certain kind of species of wood, which had certain oils in it, which you would use for perfumes and spices, and that was what was known as Atzei Shamen. 10 cubits is height, Eser Amos Komaso. No more cookies. We had plenty of cookies, okay? Thank you so much. All right, very good. 10 cubits was the height. Says the footnote, and here we're going to quote Rashi all the way through, and their legs were standing on the ground. One was on the north side of the ark, and one on the south side, their wings covering the ark and its staffs. The length of the wings covered part of the width of the staffs. Since the length of the ark was set to the width of the house, and its staffs were protruding at the entrance of the sanctuary into the curtain, which was before the entrance. And the staffs were set at the ends of the length, sides of the ark, in order that the two Levim should be able to enter between them when they were carrying it in the desert. So says Rashi. Mrs. Burloff sounds surprised. What is bothering you about that?
This is what Shlomo HaMelech does. Why are we talking that it's that way so that they can carry it in the desert?
Yes. Kishinosin oto bamidbar, as they would carry it in the desert. That sounds like a Mishkanian kind of a thing.
Mishkanian.
If you will. Why, as Mrs. Miller says, why is it suddenly a concern?
But I'm Mishkanian.
What about how?
So you need to make a Mishkanian.
We are we're live. We're live throughout the world on this phone call. Please.
Who is that?
People are calling in.
Who is that?
Mrs. Burloff's question, I think, is a perfectly valid one. I'm not quite sure how to answer it. Like most of the stuff in this part, in this particular chapter, I'm just kind of completely at sea. I'm doing the best I can over here in this non-narrative stuff. When they were carrying it in the desert, I'm not sure exactly what to say. If anybody's got any good answers, you can. I don't know. You already called in, so. How about you can email it? If you have a good answer, you can email it to me at paulplotzker@gmail.com. So that's Paul Plotzker, Plotzker spelled P as in Peter, LOTSKER, Paul Plotzker, all one word, @gmail.com, and the best answers will go into the next year, whenever that is. I got to check up my schedule. Let me just think. I'm going to be on the road. I'm going to be on the road next week, getting my girl. So I'm not sure we're going to have a class next week. But at all events, if you send in a good answer, we might be able to give you your 5 minutes of fame. Why is Rashi telling us about carrying this in the desert when we don't see any? I mean, this is Shlomo in Yerushalayim, and there's no desert to carry it in. And he's building it. And where's the desert? I mean, that was what you did about the Mishkan. So I'm not quite sure, and I think it's a good question. So if you have anything, email it in. The Kruvim had the appearance of a young child, says the Ralbag and the Metzidas Tzion. They were both similar, except that one was male, the other was female, says the Malbim. They were both similar, but one was cast as a male figure, one as a female figure. This was the same ark. This was the same Aron Kodesh that Moshe made in the desert. The wings of these Kruvim, which Shlomo made, covered both the ark, the Aron Kodesh, and the Kruvim which were on the ark. So I've got, apparently, two sets of Kruvim. Moshe made one, and now Shlomo is making one.
The Shlomos are wood, and Moshe
Yeah, it seems like Moshe's were made out of gold, and these are made out of wood, and these wooden ones are fairly big, and they're covering up the mosaic gold ones.
But then again, I'm confused because he was making this for the sphere, and if it was for the sphere, and Rashi holds that the partition. Then how do you say it covers the ones that are actually on the arrow? I would think that this is because I'm not sure what the parochas, did that have kruvim woven in? I don't remember. I think, you know, perhaps. So he's got these wooden ones. It would make sense if they were on the partition in front of, and the arrow is inside. Most of the arrow with the gold improvement are inside, and it's not really on top of them. It's more in front of I would think.
Yeah. And once again, I'm almost proud to say, I don't know. I just don't know how to answer some of these questions.
So I don't get where he says that it was covering all these things, unless you're saying that on this sphere, it's, you know, like it's covering where those things are behind the curtain. I don't know. Behind the partition.
Yeah, as usual, Mrs. Burlow is asking a good one, and yours truly is just reduced to, you know, I'm suddenly like, you know, the most exalted guy. The rabbis say, if you don't know something, admit it. You know, teach yourself to say, I don't know. Well, when it comes to this chapter, I am certainly up there with the greats. I don't know how things are looking, even though the author is doing his best to paint the picture. I'm not getting all, you know, every single
time. Well, Mashiach comes, and Shlomo comes back, we can ask
him. We can ask him, and that's exactly what I plan on doing. Okay, here we go. Verse 24. The Chamesh Amos Knaf HaKruv Ha'echas, the Chamesh Amos Knaf HaKruv Hashenis, 5 cubits was the one wing of the Kruv, and 5 cubits the other wing of the Kruv. Eser Amos Miktsos Kinafav Ad Kitsos Kinafav. 10 cubits were from the uttermost part of its one wing to the uttermost part of its other wing. 10 cubits from the uttermost part of its one to the uttermost part of the other wing, and that's how it was. See the footnote, 10 cubits were from the uttermost part of one wing to the other, as they are spread. Okay, as they were spread, it was 10 cubits. Says, who is this going to be? Presumably Rashi, quoting the Gemara in Baba Basra. Consequently, the wings of both Kruvim, which touched one another, filled the entire space of 20 cubits, which was the width of the sanctuary. And since the bodies of the Kruvim have not been included in the measurement, although they too occupied part of the 20 cubits, this proves that it stood by means of a miracle. More than 20 cubits of body and wing in an area of only 20 cubits. Rashi quoting Baba Basra 99a, that a miracle took place over there in the Mishkan, and in the Beis HaMikdash, in Shlomo's temple, this massive structure of Kruvim, should have been bigger than the spot allotted to them, and yet miraculously they were able to occupy it and all that. Fascinating. The Radak says the text does not prove that there was a miracle. It is possible, he writes, that the bodies of the Kruvim were below their spread wings, allowing a 20-cubit wing spread without an attendant miracle. Rashi is into Drush, and he is not adverse to invoking a miracle. The Radak is much more of a rationalist and will be the first one to say, not necessarily is a miracle going on over here. So that is verse 24. Now we're going to 25. Ve'eser ba'ama kruv ha'sheni. And 10 cubits was the other kruv. Midachas ve'ketzef echad l'shnei ha'kruvim. Both the kruvim were of one measure and of one form. Pasuk 26. Komas ha'kruv ha'echad eser ba'ama v'chein ha'kruv ha'sheni. The height of the one kruv was 10 cubits, and so was it of the other kruv. All right? Pasuk Chav Zayin. Vayitenas ha-kruvim besoch ha-bayis ha-panimi. He set the kruvim within the inner house. Vayifrasu es kanfei ha-kruvim. And they stretched forth the wings of the kruvim. That's interesting how that's written in the Hebrew. It doesn't say necessarily the kanfei ha-kruvim stretched forth, but they stretched forth the wings of the kruvim. Somebody was stretching forth the wings of the kruvim. That's an interesting way to write it. But he got... Okay, you could say that. Mr. Brewer was saying when they made it, when they actually created it, they created it in a stretched forth manner. They stretched forth the wings of the kruvim. Thank you. Vatigah knaf ha'echad bakir uchnaf ha'kruv ha'sheni nogas bakir ha'sheni. And the wing of the one touched the wall. The wing of the other kruv touched the other wall. V'chanfehem el toch ha'bayis nogos kanaf el kanaf. And their wings in the midst of the house, in the midst of the house, touched one another. Okay? Let's take a look at the footnote on that one. The wing of the one touched the wall, that is the north wall, says Rashi, and the wing of the other kruv touched the southern wall. They covered the ark and its staffs, says Rashi, and their wings in the midst of the house, says Rashi. That means the ends of the wings, which were towards the center of the house, they touched one another, since the entire space of the house was 20 cubits, and the wings of each kruv were 10 cubits. These kruvim were facing the entrance of the temple, whereas the kruvim of Moshe were facing each other. These kruvim were facing the entrance of the temple, whereas the kruvim of Moshe Rabbeinu faced each other. Wow. And all the walls of the house, the wooden walls, says Rashi, he surrounded with figures. Now that's the next pasuk. Let's go into that. Pasukhaf Ches Vayitzafas HaKruvim Zahav. He overlaid the Kruvim with gold. Pasukhaf Tes Veskol Kiros HaBayis Mesav Kala Pituchei Miklaos Kruvim V'timoros Uftuei Tzitzim Milifnim V'lachitzon. And all the walls of the house he surrounded with figures. Carved figures of Kruvim and palm trees and open flowers from within and for the one without. Take a look at the footnote on this one. He's surrounded with figures, meaning he's surrounded with drawings, says Rashi. Carved figures of Kruvim, says Rashi, engraved forms of Kruvim and palm trees and cords and flowers from within and for the one without. It says Rashi, from the house of the ark cover, which is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the one within, that's known as the one within, and to the Beis HaMikdash, that's the one without. He made these engravings in both the Holy of Holies and the Beis HaMikdash in the temple itself. The Abarbanel maintains that the Kruvim in the sanctuary walls were embossed, whereas those of the temple walls were engraved. The Kruvim in the sanctuary walls were embossed, and those in the Beis HaMikdash walls were engraved.
Well, you have room.
Sorry?
If the Kruvim themselves were taking up all the room, what is there for this embossed wall?
Where, Mrs. Brewer wants to know, where was there room for embossed walls if these Kruvim were taking up the space that we keep on being told that they took up? Well, it's a good question, isn't it? Right. Well, I don't know, as usual. So we're going to continue, okay, because I just don't know. From number 30, you know, we might actually finish this chapter tonight, and that would be the biggest blessing in the whole world. That's Karka by his Tzipa Zahav. And guess what, people? Can you guess? Yes, the floor of the house he overlaid with, guess what, gold. Lifnima velachitzon, for the one within and for the one without. The floor of the house he also overlaid with gold. See the footnote, literally the earth of the house. Because the karka habayis. Karka habayis sounds like the earth of the house. He overlaid with gold the entire floor. In the Beis HaMikdash, the gold was laid on the board of cypress. Whereas in the sanctuary, the gold was laid directly on the ground so as not to diminish the height of 20 cubits necessary for the Kruvim. Okay, so this is Rashi in the Ralbag. For the one within and for the one without. One second. Is that earlier? For the one within and the one without for the house of the Arka? You know, let's just keep on going. For the one within... Oh, that's on Sarah Pasuk, right. Milafnim v'lachitzon. For the one within and for the one without. For the house of the Ark cover and for the temple. Yeah. Okay, for the house of the Ark cover and for the structure in general. Okay. He overlaid the floors with gold after having completed the engravings on the walls so as not to damage the gold by walking back and forth. So first he completed the engravings on the walls. Then he overlaid the floors with gold, and this way he didn't have to damage by walking back and forth. So this is the Abarbanel. Good, 31. Laman Aleph has Pesach HaDevir Asa Dalsos Atzei Shamen. And for the ancients of the sanctuary, he made doors of olive wood. There's that term again, Atzei Shamen. Ha'ayel Mezuzos Chamishis. The lintel and side posts were five parts. Says Rashi on olive wood, literally wood of oil, meaning olive wood. As we said earlier, the lintel. And over here, ha'ayel mezuzos chamishis. The lintel and side posts, five parts. Let's take a look at this. The lintel, the alay of the ancients are the doorposts. From this side and the other, they were made round, similar to a pasuk in Yechezkel, the Elamav, Elav, Elim. Pasuk in Yechezkel 40, verse 10, see also verse 9, see also verse 21 in chapter 40. Other editions have the Elon Elah, a type of tree which is tall and curved. And likewise, in all of the structure of Yechezkel, the doorposts of the entrance are called Elim. Says Rashi, accordingly, the words mezuzos and ayel are synonymous, and they were repeated for additional clarification. The Radak translates the word ayel as the lintel and mezuzos, the doorposts. Ayel mezuzos chamishis. Okay, doors of olive wood, the lintel and side posts were of five parts. What does that mean? Side posts were of five parts. The entire door frame was of five parts. The threshold is one. The side posts on both sides are two. Together, that's three. And the lintel which is on it was made in two parts. Thus have I heard, says Rashi. But I say mezuzos chamishis, meaning there were five sides to each of the doorposts. And it was not four-sided, but five-sided. These posts were in the shape of a pentagon rather than rectangular, says the Rabbeinu Yeshaya. And he is neither speaking about the threshold nor the lintel, since we don't find the threshold or the lintel called elim, says Rashi. The Targum rendered chamishis joined. Thus, the lintel and the side posts were joined, having nothing at all to do with the number five, but rather chamishis will just mean joined for the Targum.
Like
the Radak prefers chamishis meaning five. He basically agrees to Rashi in rendering this word five, except that they were not pentagon-shaped, but rather five layers of wood arranged inward from one another for decorative purposes. But the lintel and the side posts were thus arranged. Rabbah, however, maintains that this refers to the fifth entrance to the temple. There were a total of five entrances. The fifth was to the sanctuary, the fourth to the temple, the third to the porch, the second to the priest's court, which was outside the porch, and the first was to the great court, which was beyond the Kohanic court. Verse 32, we are on a roll. Ushtei dalsos atzei shemen, the kala aleihem miklaos kruvim, and two doors of olive wood, and he carved upon them carvings of kruvim, the timoros, okay, and palm trees, uftrei tzitzim, and open flowers, the tzipa zahav, and he overlaid them with gold. Vayared ala kruvim v'ala timoros es zahav, and he spread the gold upon the kruvim and upon the palm trees. Excuse me, that was 32. See the footnote, those olive wood doors, two doors of olive wood, those doors which he made for the sanctuary had these carvings of kruvim trees and flowers, says the Metzudas David, they're made out of olive wood. And he spread upon the kruvim, that is to say, he spread the gold in thin sheets to sink them into the engraved forms, so that it be sunken into the engraved places and protrude on the protrusions, and so that the gold should not cover and thereby destroy the figures. And the figures engraved in the wood shall be clearly seen in the gold. So says Rashi. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. V'chein asah lefesach ha'echal mezuzas atzei shamen me'yetz revis. And he made likewise for the entrance of the temple side posts of olive wood of four parts. Says Rashi, of four parts, the side posts and frame of the temple were square. And so also did Targum Yonasan translate, from their four sides, they were squared. Metzudas David renders me'es revis, renders that side posts were of four parts. Okay, 34. Ushtei dalsos atzei baroshim, shnei tzolayim adelos achas galilim, ushnei kolayim adelos hashenis galilim. This is the chapter that does not end. 34, and two doors of cypress wood. The two leaves of the one door were folding, and the two leaves of the other door were folding. Okay, great.
Okay, so the door was in four parts.
So the door was in?
Four parts.
Yeah, it looks like that. Right, could be. 34, and two doors. Those doors, I'm sorry, these doors were not the same doors of olive wood mentioned in chapter 30, in verse 32 above, as sages in Midos say that there were four doors at the doorway of the sanctuary. The two outer ones open inwardly, covering the thickness of the wall, separating the temple and the sanctuary. The two inner doors opened into the sanctuary and covered the walls of the sanctuary behind these doors, which were not covered with gold. These doors were open at all times, since the staffs of the ark occupied the entire length of the sanctuary, pushing into the curtains, which were in the temple, to separate it from the sanctuary. Each of the doors was as large as half the width of the entrance, say the Radak and Rashi. The two leaves of the one door, Rabbeinu Yeshaya and the Gra in Adar Silio, render this word Tzalaim thusly, two leaves. Shnei Tzalaim, two leaves Hadelas Achas of the one door. Targum Yonasan, however, translates this as follows. Each door had two hinges, end quote, an upper hinge and a lower hinge, says Rashi. And they were folding, Gelilim, they were folding. Okay, folding. Rabbeinu Yeshaya and the Gra and the Deres Elio render this word Gelilim. As, you know, Gelilim as folding. Targum Yonasan, though, translates this word Gelilim as oval, like a wheel, indicating the hinges were round. So says Rashi. Ushnei kla'im, and two leaves. Also this word kla'im is translated as hinges, as the word tzla'im. This is Rashi speaking. This expression kla'im, I maintain, is of Aramaic derivation, and is an expression meaning entering, since the hinge enters into the cavity of the threshold. That's verse 34. 35, the kalak kruvim v'timoros uftirei tzitzim, and he carved thereon kruvim and palm trees and open flowers, v'tzipazav miyushar al hamechukeh, and he overlaid them with gold fitted upon the carved work. See the footnote, And he carved it on Kruvim on the doors of the temple, says Rashi. On the doors of the temple, he carved Kruvim. Fitted upon the carved work, the gold was set with exacting care on the carved forms. It was recessed in the place of the engraving, and it was raised in the place it was protruding, so that the forms engraved in the wood be recognized in the gold, says Rashi. Pasuk Lamed Vav, Vayiven es hachatzer ha-panimis shlosha tu'ei gazis. He built the inner court with three rows of hewn stone, the Torah krusos arazim, and a row of cut cedar beams. See the Rashi, the inner court. Chatzer ha-panimis. This is the courtyard of the Kohanim and the courtyard of the Israelites. And this was located before the porch. And he calls it Chatzer ha-panimis, the inner courtyard, because it was further inward than the court of the women, than the Ezra's Nashim. We don't find written anywhere in the biblical text the word Ezra, as in Ezra's Nashim, as a reference to the various courts, except in the Mishnah in Midos. You don't see that term Ezra referring to precincts or courts within the temple in the Bible. You see that in Mishnaic language, but not in the biblical language. Okay, and a row of cut cedar beams. Okay, and a row of cut cedar beams, the Torah krusos arazim, and a row of cut cedar beams. Well, we're going to finish him. A tier of cut beams on three tiers of hewn stone. He made the wall in this manner, repeating three rows of hewn stone and a row of cut cedar beams until he completed the desired height of the wall, says Rashi in the Masudah. Its purpose was to add strength, but not beauty, to the walls, says Rabbeinu Yeshaya Harisha. On to the next pasuk. In the fourth year was the foundation of the house of Hashem laid in the month of Ziv. Says the footnote, in the fourth year of King Shlomo's reign, says Rashi, the foundation of the house of Hashem was laid. Its foundation was begun at this time, but not completed. The foundation in the fourth year was laid, but it wasn't completed. It was just beginning. Although he had already mentioned at the beginning of the chapter that construction began in the fourth year of Shlomo's reign in the month of Ziv, the prophet repeated this date to emphasize the magnitude of the undertaking, which lasted 7 years and 7 months, and the speed with which it was completed, a rather positive indication of God's heavenly blessings. So says the Abarbanel. All right. Next, Lamed Ches, and it's the last verse. Uvashena ha'achas esrei b'yerach bul hu achodesh hashmini. And in the 11th year, in the month of Bul, hu achodesh hashmini, that's the 8th month, kala habayis v'chol devarav v'chol mishpatav, the house was finished throughout all the parts thereof, v'yivne'ehu shev ashanim. And according to all the fashion of it, and he built it 7 years. Vayivnehu, he built it Sheva Shanim. Took Shlomo 7 years from the beginning of the laying of the foundation till its completion, 7 years. Take a look at the footnotes in the month of Bul. This is known today as Marcheshvan. It's a period when the grass decays. The Hebrew, Beis Lamed Hei, Balev. When the grass decays in the field and when cattle are given mixed fodder from what is in the house. From the expression, quote, he gave fodder, vayavol, he gave fodder to the donkeys. Take a look at Judges chapter 19, verse 21. All that was Rashi. The Targum translates this word bul, the month in which the fruits are gathered, similar to the word yivul, that's Rabbeinu Yeshaya. And he built it, our last final footnote of the chapter, he built it 7 years after the clearing, that the construction began in the fourth year and was completed in the 11th year. There was no purpose in repeating that the total time of building was 7 years, because we know that 4 plus 7 equals 11, other than to emphasize that there were no unnecessary delays. He built continuously for 7 years, says the Radak and the Matsudas David. Sorry? I want to thank everybody for showing up today. Thank you for hanging with me, even though I was a little bit late. Mrs. Brola, thank you. I want to thank everybody for your patience as you basically plowed through the last 10 or 12. We kind of dobbined it up, But you know what? Sometimes you got to just do that. God willing, next week I'm going to be back in the East Coast picking up my daughter, so I'm probably not going to be able to have a class. I'm going to be too busy picking her up and spending some time with her. So we're going to give everybody one last bit of summer vacation. We'll pick it up, Mr. Shem, in 2 weeks from tonight. God willing, we'll all be back in the Midwest, and everybody will be able to pick it up and start as we start the month of Elul, and of course we're already in it. Should be a good month for us. We're going to be closer to the new year, and God willing, in 2 weeks, we'll begin the study of Chapter 7. Wishing everybody a wonderful week. Hatzlach and bracha and a good Shabbos. Shmuel Plotzker signing off from Gulf Manor Synagogue and our School of Jewish Studies here in Cincinnati, Ohio. Have a good night, everybody. Thanks so much. Bye-bye now.